and me, MBPD, season 4, episode 1, a conversation with Sorsha. Today, I am joined with Sorsha. Sorsha, you can go ahead and say hi.
Hello.
So, Sorsha and I connected over Instagram. I believe it was at the end of last year, and we've been talking about making this episode now for a couple of months. Yeah. Today we're going to be talking kind of about retrospection and introspection, and about how important it is to, you know, honor the path of healing in our mental health journey. Sorsha, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So my name is Sorsha. I'm 24 currently, and I live in Colorado in the U.S. And I just super recently actually got diagnosed with BPD, and I saw this podcast and binge listened to it, and then, you know, reached out to you. Mm-hmm. For an opportunity to just kind of have a safe space to talk about everything, and just kind of discuss, as you said, how important healing is in this journey and just kind of what that has been like so far.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to kind of backtrack a little bit and talk about your diagnosis journey, because I'm always so interested in how people came to BPD and how they learned about it and, you know, their kind of introduction to this mental illness. So you said you were recently diagnosed. Was that like a professional diagnosis? Like, how did that come about?
That was, so I would say it's a semi-confirmed diagnosis, honestly, okay, at this point, because I did go to a psychiatrist after already going to multiple therapists and that kind of not leading anywhere. I was like, you know what? I really, really think this is what I have. I've been in therapy on and off since middle school. I've had multiple different diagnoses. Not sure, you know, which ones are misdiagnosed and which ones
are, yeah,
they kind of all go together. If I'm being yeah, honest, like, it's really hard. And that's kind of, so where I'm at currently is, you know, I talked to the psychiatrist. She's wonderful. She's amazing. And she was like, I do very well think that this could be what it is. But at the same time, as I just mentioned, all of your other diagnoses have the same symptoms.
Yeah.
But personally, the reason that I kind of really sit with this, and, you know, it's hard to label yourself with a diagnosis, like, this is who I am or what I am. You don't really want to do that and go that deep into it. But my life started really, really changing about 2 years ago when I first heard about this diagnosis and got really fixated on it. And then I've heard from multiple people now that they're like, yep, this is pretty, this sounds a lot like you. And so I went through all the diagnostic surveys and everything, and that is kind of what we landed on. I meet all of the criteria for it.
Yeah.
But giving myself that official label has been kind of back and forth. So
yeah.
Yes.
It's definitely a struggle. Because there's some, you know, there's some therapists that don't want to diagnose people with BPD.
Exactly.
There's a lot of stigma in the mental health community about a BPD diagnosis. So I think there's a lot of people who are in the same kind of boat, like maybe it's been suggested to them, or, you know, they've read about it or they've heard a podcast or whatever, and they're like, oh, this sounds like me.
Yeah.
But I don't know, right? And that's definitely hard. Like, so when you first kind of heard about BPD, did it feel like you had found something that felt comforting to you? Did you feel like, okay, now I can kind of grow from this? Or was it scary? Like, how did you feel about this potential diagnosis?
Yeah, well, how I felt and kind of when it first came up, you know, the diagnosis was super recently, like right before you and I started talking, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, I started listening to this podcast during that, you know, like contemplation phase of, you know, maybe this is kind of what I'm dealing with, and, you know, in another way that I can kind of approach my mental health. But when I first heard about it, one of my friends actually had been diagnosed with it years ago, and, you know, just talking to her and kind of hearing her interpersonal situation and everything going on, I was like, wow, you know, that sounds so similar. Like, I've never had anybody that I can be so completely honest with about everything going on, and who just seems to completely understand, you know. So I was like, maybe I could look into this. And, you know, I told her a little bit about my struggles with similar things. She also struggles with a chronic physical illness as well, and so we kind of started talking about how those two things relate, and it got me into this whirlwind of, okay, maybe I really do need to look more into this. So I tried to go back to multiple different therapists, and honestly, for me, it was more of a, I've been going to therapy since middle school. I've dealt with, I've been diagnosed with OCD, depression, anxiety, PTSD, complex PTSD, like everything.
Yeah, everything.
Surprisingly not ADHD, which I sometimes think about. But yeah, all of those, and I've been talking about all those and dealing with all of those and having to psychoanalyze myself with all of those for such a long time. That I was like, I've done the talk therapy for this. I've done EMDR, you know, stuff like that. And it's given me a lot of tools and a lot of mindfulness. And I think in ways that I am able to better function in society. But I am still mentally feel like I am all over the place, like I'm suffering, that I just cannot get a grip. So this sounds like maybe it's deeper than what I'm thinking it is, you know? Maybe it's more of the foundation of how I am versus, you know, these other diagnoses. So I started looking into it a little bit, and I was like, you know, this doesn't really feel like me. Like, I don't externalize. So the big thing for me in my back and forth with it is I don't externalize a lot anymore. So that was the thing for me, where I guess I was thinking of it in more of a way like bipolar, where you have these big, insane, really obvious episodes, and I don't want to say insane in a bad way, but there's really intense, you know?
It's really intense,
Really, really externalizing that outwardly, and I just had never done that. I was always suffer in solitude type.
Oh my God, I understand.
And so I would get, I would feel these crazy, crazy intense emotions and so easily triggered, and they would change so suddenly, and I couldn't figure out what was going on, but I always pushed them internal. And so I didn't really think about a lot of things that had been brought up to me before in regards to like BPD or bipolar, like the being super, super impulsive, or having a lot of self-harm tendencies and stuff like that. And for some reason, this was like a part of me in denial, you know, at the time. But I was like, oh, I don't do that. Like, I'm not like that. Blah, blah, blah. And then just a tiny bit more looking into myself, I was like, oh, that's exactly what I do. I just do it in ways that people don't see.
So yeah,
nobody has noticed this before, because I don't externalize that. I don't tell people about it. I don't, you know, nobody can see that on the surface, just like having an invisible physical illness. Like, everybody thinks that you're doing well with what you have and et cetera. But the reality is I just don't tell you about it.
it's definitely a hard balance to find, because especially when you're in therapy, right? Like, a lot of the time we talk about what triggers us, and we talk about like situations that are happening around us, but then to actually be like, no, there's something going on within me and it's the way I interact with the world. It's really hard to come to that realization of like, okay, all of these things are triggering me. So maybe there's something going on within me that I have to look at, you know, instead of kind of like, I struggled a lot with understanding that, you know, I have issues And to even admit that and to say, I have these issues within me.
Yes.
And that influences the way that I interact with other people. Mm-hmm. Was like a really big change that had to happen of like looking at myself and saying, yeah. Okay, where can I do the work? Mm-hmm. Instead of constantly kind of looking at other people and saying like, well, they should be doing this, like they shouldn't be triggering me, blah, 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 right? Like it is a very different thing to have to go through of saying, I am the person that, you know, needs to take on a little bit more work or whatever. It's definitely hard.
I agree completely. And I think that, you know, being diagnosed with a physical chronic illness so young, mm-hmm. at 3 days old, and going through therapy for everything, they always kind of made this assumption or kind of pushed this mindset that everything that I was dealing with mentally was kind of an effect of my physical illness.
Yeah.
And so it was really easy for me early on to kind of adopt this victim mindset of, yeah. you know, of basically thinking that everything, whether you believe in, you know, the nurture or nature, or however, you know, you kind of come across it becoming and manifesting itself into your personality, into your being, mm-hmm. I really feel like that mindset was kind of pushed on me a little bit more growing up, being like, yeah. oh, well, you know, poor you, you've got all these things going on, it makes sense that, you know, you have this, this, and this. But I think because of that mindset, it was never until I, you know, I think I was about 19 when I first started really looking into my mental health in general, for my own good, for my own sake.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody was just, again, like, you're going to therapy and you're talking about this because, you know, you've almost died multiple times and you've got all these things going on. But as you mentioned earlier, I dealt with all of that and I accepted all of that. I came to acceptance with that kind of thing, mm-hmm. from an early age, but I felt like there was just something wrong. There was something that was completely different about how I interacted with people in the
yeah.
world versus most people, because it just didn't feel like an external factor. It felt like me.
Yeah.
And I could recognize that within myself from a very early age, but I think that, again, I had kind of adopted that victim mindset and just tried and accepted the fact that, mm-hmm. I thought it was related to all of these other things and to the situation of my physical illness and the situation of my upbringing and the situation of, you know, like past relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so, like, this is just basically an effect of what has happened to me, not me.
And yeah, once I it's hard.
Accepted that, it really, really changed my perspective and how I started interacting with the world, when I was like, no, it's me. There's something here that, mm-hmm. I need to be responsible for and I need to look at. So that kind of fueled the diagnosis journey.
And that's like, that's the hard part, right? That's sometimes the hardest part of all, is recognizing that we have to take a little bit of kind of like awareness, like more self-awareness of, okay, there's something that I need to work on. So yeah. I know you mentioned that you were trying different therapies.
Mm-hmm.
Was there anything that, you know, helped you to begin this kind of process of looking a little bit more deeper within yourself? Like, was there any kind of, I know you were mentioning, what was it, EMDR?
Yeah.
Or, yeah. so was there any kind of, like, one type of therapy or, like, some type of therapeutic tool that allowed you to begin the process of, you know, looking a little bit more deeply, becoming a little bit more aware of, like, your internal workings?
I would honestly say talk therapy itself was never the most helpful for me.
Mm-hmm.
I know you have mentioned that before as well, but I did try it. Obviously, I did it for a very long time, and I kept going back to think, oh, you know, maybe they can give me more tools and more techniques and stuff like that. But I honestly realized one of my things is I have a very, very difficult time explaining my emotions and thoughts to people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not for a lack of, like, I feel like I'm almost too self-aware for sure. I definitely over psychoanalyze myself and all of that. Like, I am constantly having multiple conversations with myself in my head about everything and everything. But it just, EMDR did help a little bit, but I didn't see a lot of progress from that. Talk therapy did give me a lot of tools, like, you know, just honestly just being very mindful is what talk therapy mm-hmm. taught me, in a way that is more constructive and productive versus harmful. So I would say, if anything, that is what it gave me, is taking my already super internalized dialogue and psychoanalyzing and doing it in a positive manner versus just, you know, being like, oh my gosh, what is wrong with you? Why are you thinking like this? And then, you know, that spiral happens as well.
Yeah.
Overanalyzing yourself in a negative manner and telling yourself there's so many things wrong with you, and why do you feel like this and think like this and have these thoughts and etc.
It's definitely a hard balance to find, because I've heard from so many people, right, that they've been to therapy and they're like, I've been told by every therapist, you're so self-aware. And I'm like, yeah, like, I understand this. I can explain to you, like, I'm kind of the opposite. I can explain what my rationale is behind nearly everything I do. Like, if somebody says, why did you do that? I know exactly why I did it.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily, knowing why you did something doesn't necessarily mean that, like, it's a positive thing to do. Like, sometimes I know why I did something, and then I go, I shouldn't have done that, though. Like, I know that that was not a nice thing to do or not a kind thing to do, but I still did it, and I can tell you the reasons why. And it's almost like I can justify everything I'm doing.
Oh my gosh.
Self-critical, like.
You said that, I have the same thing as well, and I don't know why, but a therapist once told me that, because I do the same thing, so I can explain like a situation or occurrence or an action or a thought and be like, this is where this stems from, I know this is where this stems from, and like you said, I know that I shouldn't have done that, but I did it anyways, and I'm very mindful of it in that sense. But when you are going back and talking about it, I was explaining a situation to one of my therapists one time, and she was like, well, you know, I think, and, you know, a little bit of insight into my past here with this line, but she said, maybe you do that because you always felt like you had to justify your emotions when you were growing up, because I was never really encouraged to have my emotions because they were always so intense. And always so inconvenient for, in the eyes of, you know, my family. So I learned very early on to internalize everything. But I always, now that I am an adult, feel like I need to justify every single emotion, feeling, word, anything that I do or say or feel. And so I have this constant internal dialogue that's doing that as well. So as you said, I know what I'm doing and why, and how it makes other people feel and how it makes me feel. But there's just, you know, there's still that disconnect of sometimes that's my brain.
Yeah, it's very hard to find a balance between that, because I am exactly, like, I hope you know, and even people who are listening, if someone's listening to this and saying, oh my God, me, same, like 100%.
Twinsies.
Like, yeah, right? Like, there are, I feel like the more we have conversations like this, the more we realize that we are not alone in all of the things that made us think, you know, I'm just like crazy. Like, I can't, you know, people don't understand me. And it's like, fundamentally, there are similarities between us. And I think that's what makes this diagnosis so interesting, because as much as it is highly stigmatized, there are a lot of commonalities between those of us who live with this condition. And it's really interesting to hear you say that, because I literally everything you're saying is exactly what I've thought to myself, right? Like, I've been in exactly the same position of being like, I know I'm doing this, I hate that I'm doing this, or like, I should really stop doing this. And then it becomes like an internal battle of being like, well, why should you stop? Like, no one cared about you when you were younger. So, and it's a whole, you have to justify everything, like 100%. Like, the moment, I think I'm waiting for somebody to ask me, why did you do that? So that I can explain.
Yes, exactly. And I have, okay, tell me if you have experienced this, but I have one of my paranoias of things that sometimes gets out of control is I have this constant paranoia about people being like that they're going to do that. Like, I'm going to be at the gym lifting or something and my form's going to be off and someone's going to come up to me and be like, why would you ever do that that way? You are ridiculous. You are so dumb. Like, why would you do it this way? And I have that feeling about anything that I say or do or just me being me. I have this feeling. And I think that if this makes sense, I feel like the different, I call them my different modes, like my different shifts, I guess, in kind of my ways of thinking. So I'll be, I feel like it's my different modes of myself all having different feelings about different situations or different thoughts about different situations, and then them arguing with each other about which one is right.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like,
and it's like a screaming battle in my head. Sometimes it's not screaming, it's more like conversation, but...
No, like, so I talk to my partner and I say, like, oh yeah, that was past Steph, or like, that was Steph, like, from 5 seconds ago, or like, oh, that's not a nice Steph, like, just ignore that one. Like, it's really interesting to realize that there is this kind of, I look at it as fragmentation, most of all, because it does feel like they're isolated, like the different parts are isolated from each other, and that's why this conversation, like, internally is happening when I do something, because these other parts of me are like kind of critiquing each other, and it's almost like there's like a chorus critiquing everything I'm doing all day long. And it's all internal, right? Like, it's all inside of me. Like, no one else is critiquing me around me. Like, when I was younger, there was a lot more, you know, when you're a child, and especially in a situation like where your parents aren't the best, there's a lot more critiquing happening externally. And so you internalize it. And so now there's like the part of me that is like kind of always critiquing what I'm doing. And sometimes it's louder than others, right? Like, it happens. But it's very interesting, this kind of fragmented idea of an individual that ends up developing. And that's kind of where the personality aspect of BPD comes in, right? It's your personality.
It's not external, it's how you function.
So what, you said that you've been working towards this like healing journey for quite a while, right? Like, what would you say would be, obviously I think we're both in the same kind of boat that, like, I don't know if you really believe in this, but there's some people who say you can be healed from BPD. I don't necessarily think that's the truth. I think it's more manageable. Like, you can definitely learn how to manage the ups and downs and the intensity of emotions and these different things. But what would your future look like? Like, do you right now, do you feel like you're working towards more harmonizing these different parts of you? Do you feel like you're working towards becoming more aware of these different parts? Like, where are you kind of now, and where do you hope to go in the future or whatever?
I would say the past 2 years since kind of making this discovery of the diagnosis of quiet BPD, I really have just kind of focused on, honestly, acceptance a lot, because I realized something I took from therapy with my physical illness is that denial will never do you any good. It will just completely bury all of the emotions and the thoughts and everything that you need to work through, and it will not get you anywhere. So once I, you know, really, really resonated with everything, I was like, okay, you know, whether this is necessarily true or not, meaning whether I get an official diagnosis for this or not, this I feel so unbelievably validated by this information, and by information I mean just me getting completely hyperfixated on this and doing ridiculous hours of research and, you know, trying to focus on more reading into people, or like listening to things like this podcast where people who are actually living with it tell you what it's like, versus kind of the seemingly biased, stigmatized, just straight information, like textbook type information, which obviously is useful and necessary to look into. But so after looking at all of that, I was like, okay, I need to accept this, and I can use this as kind of a foundational piece to know, you know, all of these things that are happening, I need to take responsibility for how I deal with it. And again, I kind of realized that talk therapy maybe wasn't the best for me as far as moving forward. So I just went full force into kind of more alternative practices. Like, I got really into exercise, which did help a lot, because I was not, you know, very consistent with that kind of stuff at all. Being chronically ill, I just, my physical body was not about it for a long time. But, you know, I got really into like lifting and yoga and cardio, and I kind of realized that while I started that journey, I was kind of realizing that I really need to take a holistic approach to everything. Because, you know, if you go into therapy because of like situational depression, for instance, a lot of what they tell you is, okay, well, this reason is why you're depressed, so we need to like kind of not only tackle the symptoms you're having with the depression, but this reasoning behind it. So when you don't you have a reasoning anymore, and it's kind of just who you are, you have to approach it from, attack from all angles. So I was thinking, okay, well, the first thing I know I can do that will help is making sure that my physical body is as tip-top as it can be, meaning being consistent with my self-care, with taking care of myself, with the exercise. Nutrition is a huge thing, because I do feel like whatever you put into your body kind of affects everything, how your mind works as well. And so I got really into the physical aspect of everything first, and I said, you know, if I feel good in my body, if my body feels okay to be in, then maybe it'll be easier to deal with this mental stuff.
So I got
really into that, kind of learned what I needed to learn to be able to do it confidently, and it kind of gave me a good goal to meet with that. And then after that, I started getting really into, back into writing. I used to write a lot as a kid. I realize now that that was a huge outlet for me, and all the crazy places my mind went to, because I would do creative writing. And all of the characters would always relate to a mode of myself, is another thing that I realized. So that was a good way for me as a kid, and I'm trying to readopt that now, to be able to have an outlet for those different, you know, whether you want to call them modes, fragments, personalities. I was able to express myself in each of those different paths in those stories. So I think having an outlet for that is good as well, just being able to do, to explore those different fragments of yourself, honestly. And just be like, okay, well, what would like life be like if I was only like this? That statement actually has helped me in a way as well, because it's kind of helped me realize that the parts of me that I am not the most fond of, tending to be, you know, the more angry or, especially when I was younger, like a lot more manipulative.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, or mean, even like the certain parts of my brain that are just very, very suspicious of people and people's intentions and stuff like that. I call it my dark personalities. All those guys.
Yeah.
But kind of coming to that realization of these are different, and I don't necessarily have to act like that, and kind of separating the fragments from the actions of like my core self.
Yeah.
And how I interact with the world, rather.
It's definitely a process, right? Like, I think one of the, like, I resonate with a lot of what you're saying, like the holistic kind of looking.
Yeah.
I've always found it really interesting that, like, almost all of my therapists have given me like a wheel of like emotions.
Yeah.
And I've always found it really interesting that it's like the plethora of emotions that a person can feel is so much. And one of the things that makes this disorder a disorder is that you do feel all of those at very high intensities, right? Yes. So it's really like, I think that there's a kind of joy that you can take from recognizing that, yes, you will feel these lows and they will be so intense and it will be very hard. But on the flip side, you can give yourself the space to find the joy and to find this kind of like euphoric happiness, right? Yes. And not everybody can feel that. Like, and so it's, for me, it's taken this kind of journey to really explore, okay, how do I deal with the really low times? But then how do I allow myself to just feel this kind of like happiness from life? Like, my mindfulness practice has allowed me to, you know, take joy in things like when it's raining outside and allowing myself to just like really be happy about that and find joy in that. And like, it's a really beautiful, it's hard, you know, like the intensity of all of the emotions is sometimes super exhausting.
Yes, for sure.
But it is, there's a kind of beauty in it, right? In being able to, instead of forcing yourself to, at least from my perspective, like forcing yourself to be one way, allowing yourself to really experience the plethora of human emotions and what it truly means to be human. It's just like really beautiful. And I think that that's like a really kind gesture that we can make for ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
I completely agree. What do you think, like, so now that we've kind of gone through your whole diagnosis journey, like where we are now, like all this different stuff, how do you kind of rectify with when these more, you know, harder emotions come up, or these like harder personalities, like you were talking about, like having to, you know, hold yourself accountable and things, like how do you find, do you give yourself the space to work through these emotions? Like, how do you handle them? You know, like how do you handle stress? Because ultimately that's what triggers a lot of us, right?
Yes.
And especially thoughts about the past. Like, I don't know if you're the same, but I struggle with so many guilt and shame and all these different aspects. How do you kind of rectify that in your own words?
How I manage it? Well, I feel like one thing that has definitely helped me the most, honestly, is, like I said, just trying to make sure all of the other aspects of my life are pretty balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And doing a mindset thing that really helped me out was when I actually started doing jiu-jitsu. My jiu-jitsu school is very, it's not for competition, it's strictly for self-defense. And a big thing that I learned there is just kind of the act of self-defense, but against not only external but internal situations. Mm-hmm. So I learned to kind of view it in a way that I have to accept these other sides of myself, these other ways of thinking, these other perceptions, and let them be in a way, because if I don't let them be, they're just gonna scream inside my head and claw their way out in very terrible ways. But I have to internally, with how I treat myself, act in a way of self-defense of, okay, I accept that these people, I kind of treat it like they're an external factor in a way. So I'll be like, this personality is really self-sabotaging me right now. And I'll be able to recognize that pretty easily, as you said earlier, because we're like, just go down a spiral of having one thought or feeling, and then everybody argues over it. So just accepting that and being like, okay, well, how can I let this feeling, this thought exist without it having a permanent or semi-permanent impact on the other parts of myself, the other parts of my life? So like, if I would get into a spot where I am just so anxious or so angry or so, like, I'm just completely spiraling, where I cannot get out, where I feel like I'm drowning in it, you know, when you're in a whirlpool where you're like, I can swim, but I can't, like, I can keep my head above water, but I'm just going around in a circle and I can't do anything about it until it stops. And you kind of just have to let it be, was the hardest thing for me. And so if I've had any of those really intense emotions, I have like some kind of emergency plan type of things, I guess. So I would always do something physical to get like that physical exertion, and usually the more physical symptoms, like of anxiety, a little less intense. So I get really, really stressed. That's like the first thing I do is I will go to the gym and I will absolutely exhaust myself. So I'll start and I'll do like some mobility work, and then I'll lift and I'll do cardio, and I will spend literally like 3.5-4 hours at the gym until my mind feels calmer. And maybe those emotions go away, maybe they don't, maybe they stick around. It just kind of depends. But that is always the first thing I do, because a lot of the times I do feel like they're connected, where I will feel anxious physically and then my mind will just cultivate anything. It's got plenty to cultivate, but it will just cultivate up anything of why I feel like that. So I'll try to get rid of the external factors first and make sure that I'm hydrated, eat well, and then, you know, I don't have all this extra energy that my mind is now using because my body is not using it. So that's like the first thing I'll do, no matter what, any type of negative feeling. And then if it's just really, really sticking in there, I will, you know, do some meditation, get really back in, and the exercise piece as well, whether it be yoga, lifting, cardio, it just helps you get back in touch with your body if you're like a lot. I don't know if you have this as well, but if I get triggered into a lot of stress, especially anything that involves the emotion of anger, I will, my instinctual reaction is just to completely numb myself from it. And then I get that whole, oh, well, now I don't feel anything, or I literally feel like I'm in a dream right now, and I don't even know if this is really happening for sure. Like, I think I'm here. I'm pretty sure I can feel the ground on my foot, but I don't know, you know, if I'm going to remember this later.
I have the problem of when I'm really angry, especially when I was younger, I've kind of taught myself to recognize anger as a physical embodiment. But when I was younger, and when I was just kind of starting this, I would get so angry that I would kind of like black out and then say really harsh and mean things, and I'd completely forget. And it was like a whole other part of me would take over and say absolutely horrible things. And then afterwards, people would be like, "What, you said this to me?" And I'd be like, "No, I didn't."
What are you talking about?
And they'd be like, "Yes, you did. Like, you said this." And I was like, it took me quite a while to have to start to realize, like, okay, when I'm feeling angry, my heart is racing. That's kind of one of my first signs. Yeah. And then my hands get really, like, hard and tense. And then I can feel my shoulders getting tense. And so, like, now I have a lot of physical sensations associated with emotions.
Yes.
So now I can, like, recognize, okay, before I actually start to feel angry, like, in my head, I'm starting to feel it physically, so yeah, maybe I need to, like, take a step away. Right. You know, like don't let me...
Maybe you need to implement some strategies right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely get that, because I feel like I definitely learned from a young age that, again, I wasn't really okay to externalize these, and anger always really scared me as a child, and I related a lot of my mental issues, honestly, to other people's anger. And so I just kind of made this agreement with myself. I can actually remember the exact moment. I was in my room, I was living with my dad, and it was not a good living situation. We did not have a good relationship. And my half brother was there, and he had broken this like misting fountain that I had that was my grandmother's, and it was very fundamental to me because she raised me, and she was definitely, you know, the favorite person phenomenon. She was for sure the favorite person. Anything about her was just such a touchy subject after she passed away, and he was so young. And I just remember he broke the fountain because he was messing with it when I told him not to. He got on a chair and was standing above it and blowing on the lid and all this stuff. And he shattered it. And I screamed at him. I completely blacked out, and I didn't say anything necessarily. I think the only thing that I did was just scream at the top of my lungs and say something along the lines of, like, why the fuck would you do that, like, blah blah blah, and just got so intense about it. And the way that he looked at me scarred me for life.
He looked scary,
hit me in my soul of, that's how I, you know, look at my dad, that's how I look at all of these people that have emotionally, like, traumatized me from anger, and why I'm so scared of anger. And so I think in that moment I just made this conscious agreement with myself of, I will not externalize my anger on somebody else, no matter how bad it is. And so,
but
since
then, you become a victim.
Yes, exactly. Then, and then it turns to me. Yes. And so I never thought that I had these, you know, intense outbursts and stuff like that. You know, going back to when people had mentioned diagnoses like this before. But then I realized, oh, I do that. It's just on myself. I don't do it to other people. If I get angry at someone else or something else, it automatically turns into my problem or my fault. And then I am being mean to myself. I'm harming myself. I'm, you know, isolating myself, which kind of is the same thing in certain situations. And all of that jazz. So I just, from a very early age, decided that I was not going to inflict the negative emotions onto people. And that caused me a lot of issues with figuring out how to manage it and how to let those emotions exist, because they're important and they tell you things. And so I didn't listen to any of my negative emotions for a very long time, which I think just really had an impact on them coming out in bad ways, that were not constructive.
Well, this conversation has been really, really great. I thank you so much for your time. I just, really quickly before we wrap up, is there anything that you want to just, you know, if you could talk to someone, let's say someone who's just starting out their diagnosis journey, what would you say to them, like, knowing what you know now, like, after, you know, therapy and after having this kind of really introspective perspective about yourself, like, what would you want to say to someone who's maybe just starting out on their journey, even if they're not diagnosed, you know, just starting out thinking about mental health and exploring what their mental health is like? What would you say?
I would definitely say, first and foremost, try to be conscious about being nice to yourself. Mm-hmm. Meaning just that, you know, approach your mental health with empathy and gratitude for how strong you already have been dealing with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you feel like you are fragmented or not, you still know yourself better than anyone and have the most capacity to be the most help to yourself because mm-hmm. of that. So I think, you know, if you're struggling with wanting to going and get a diagnosis, or you're worried about, you know, kind of that phenomenon happening of, I'm going to label myself with this and now this is who I am, or this mm-hmm. is going to affect every other aspect of my life, just think about it in a way of, wouldn't it be nice to have kind of a foundation of knowing how I function, or knowing that there's other people there who have these same type of thought patterns and perspectives that I have. Because I think the most validating thing for me, and the thing that helped me the most when I started, was finding, honestly, the diagnosis of the quiet BPD, and then listening to, you know, this podcast and another podcast that I listened to that kind of helped me get out of a very abusive relationship, and then also come to terms with the more negative sides of myself.
Yeah.
And just doing a lot of self-reflection and being really honest with yourself about the parts that you're not fond of, because that's going to give you the most progress.
Mm-hmm.
And the parts of yourself that, you know, you do like, try to feed into that more and kind of think action-wise, what would my life be like if I, you know, really embraced this part of myself without disregarding the other parts.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful message. Thank you, Sorsha. So, Sorsha, I'm going to tag you, like, in the description. Do you mind if I just put your Instagram on there?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, cool. So if you're listening and you want to connect with Sorsha, like, I'll put her Instagram in the description of this episode. And I thank you so much for giving me your time, Sorsha. It's been really nice talking to you. And I hope that you, wherever you're listening, whoever you are, I hope you know that we support you, and that it is important to be kind to yourself, first and foremost. You know, kindness is key, especially if you're exploring mental health situations and you're trying to know how to navigate this world. You need kindness, especially, and empathy. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye.